Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another special edition of the Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show as the United States, in their second friendly in the Bruce Arena era, they come on out and get a 1-0 victory over the Reggae Boys of Jamaica. 2.0 of Bruce Arena's his tenure now as the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. Believe we might have a special person joining us. Is this Chris Webb or is this Robert Hay?
No, this is the unspecial joining you. This is Robert Hay.
Oh, well, hey, Robert, you're always special when you join me. So, I mean, come on. But
you've lowered the bar. Pretty well in this episode already, so.
Oh, listen. Let me tell you something right now. When Webby tweets on Twitter, you gotta listen. So why not throw out the invitation? Who knows if he's gonna join us tonight? It would be nice. But once again, everybody, Robert Hay joins us. Soccer Minnows website, of course, he helps out with WorldSoccerTalk.com, and he is the best internet movie reviewer I've ever met.
Is that because of my personality or the reviews, or do I want to ask that question?
Yeah, it's up to you if you want to keep that Pandora's box open.
Okay, good call. Good call. I'll leave it there.
All right. Excuse me. But second match, second friendly for Bruce Arena, Robert, as the United States, they get a 1-0 win over Jamaica. They finally open a goal. Two matches, both are clean sheets. Obviously, while we have to admit that this is a B team for the United States right now, this looked like to be Jamaica's B, C team, you might have to say. But still, I think it was important to get a victory mentally from these players when Bruce Arena does pick out the roster for World Cup qualifying, resuming for this U.S. team over at Avaya Stadium in San Jose, California, take on Honduras.
Yeah, you know, I think for some of the players, it was certainly important to get the victory. Probably all the players from a different perspective, you know, depending on where you are on the field. But I think overall, the important takeaway from this match is, you know, if you're a player, did you play well? Did you show Bruce Arena and his staff really what you can bring to the World Cup qualifying team? And did you show exactly, you know, all of your, you know, the potential that you have? These games are so hard to watch for a number of reasons. But the big one is it's just they're never really beautiful soccer. They're always disjointed and they're always kind of rough, especially in the beginning, you know, because these January camps, there's a lot of players who haven't played together, and a number of them haven't played in U.S. uniform, and you know, this kind of setup is new to them, and there's a big learning process that takes place over the 30 days that a lot of the other players who aren't at this camp get multiple months to get into. So it's never a beautiful soccer, and it's never going to be great team soccer. But you know, what you need to look for in these kind of matches is the individual performances. Did player A do what they needed to do to make this team? How can they contribute? Going into this match, you look at these players and say, how can they contribute to the U.S. making the World Cup and, you know, advancing in the World Cup if you get to that point? And did these players over these two matches do that? And I think after two matches, you could look at some players that we'll get into and you say, yes, I think that they showed what they can bring to a World Cup qualifying team. And I think come selection time in about a couple weeks or so, Bruce Arena is going to get called their name. And there will be some other players that, you know, got a shot and really, you know, this is a great opportunity for them to represent their country, to play in front of some adoring fans, sign some autographs, get some times with the national team. But, you know, this will be their opportunity, and that'll be it for them. So you know, it will go through, I'm sure, some of these fringe players, some of these players who are on the edge where they got on the yay or nay side. But these aren't the type of matches for just casual fans. These are the type of matches for people who are really interested to see, you know, what's going to happen with the national team and I'm even less interested sort of kind of in Bruce Arena because it's Bruce Arena 2.0. We kind of know what we're going to get, and we know he's not going to be fired anytime soon. So it's all about the players, and did they live up to the end of the bargain that they were supposed to coming into these matches?
Well, let me just go to Bruce Arena for a second here. I think we have to give credit, at least, not saying that Sunil Gulati had to go and, I don't know if you want to say beg, but at least ask Bruce Arena after he sacked Klinsmann. Well, I'm trying to be. After he sacked Klinsmann, I mean, did he go to Bruce Arena and, just to bring him back? I just think, like, when you look at the last World Cup qualifying cycle, especially with what happened with Mexico, De La Torre, I mean, he was basically the FMF kept him there way too long, which is very unusual for the FMF to keep him there, or at least to keep a coach, in place for as long as that losing streak was going on in the Hex. You know what I mean? Because usually, you're on the hot seat, and once that red button gets hit, you're done, you're gone. You know, the chair you're sitting on, you're going right through the trap door, and it's over. That didn't happen, and then the change was made late before, you brought in an interim before, when Mexico went to Columbus. And then the last two matches, you brought in Vucetich, who basically, no, they didn't help him either. And, if it wasn't for the United States beating Panama in the final qualifier, Mexico was never going to the playoffs, let alone to Brazil, if the United States didn't help them. I give credit to Sunil Gulati, Robert, for recognizing the issue, at least, and saying, okay, we have to make a change now. And that's why I'm giving Gulati credit, because he was aware that this could be, them now than what Mexico was last cycle.
Yeah, I think the Bruce Arena thing was a perfect timing for both parties. I think it was with Jurgen Klinsmann, it was getting to the point of saturation where it's just everybody had turned. The players had turned on him, the media had turned on him, and things were getting very rough. And, it was, you've talked about on this show, and I know Kardik and a number of your other guests have talked about, it almost seems like the timing was right, not only from the fact that Klinsmann wasn't getting results, but with everything else going on in U.S. soccer, it was a great way to kind of distract from some other deep issues that are going on in the federation. So from a U.S. soccer perspective, it was a great time to make a move. From a Bruce Arena perspective, it was a great time to come back because, he was the contract, I believe, was up with L.A. Galaxy. He'd accomplished a lot in his time with L.A. Galaxy. And even though coaching the national team wasn't a new challenge, you have to imagine a coach, any good coach has an ego, and Bruce Arena is definitely a very good coach. So you have to imagine his ego at being asked to come back and rescue the U.S. national team again appealed to him. So I suspect that without any insider knowledge that this was just a good it was a good timing from both parties. And the timing in terms of the hiring works well because Bruce Arena's first camp is the January Camp Cupcake, as we like to call it, where he could bring in MLS players he's familiar with, and play around with them and put them in places where, he'd seen them play either with their club teams or he could experiment with them based on what he knew about them. So it was a good fit in terms of him building a roster. And now he can use that knowledge and what he's seen over this past month. Because you have to remember, it's not just what we see in the friendlies on TV, but it's also the training camps behind the scenes, what he sees there as well, how he mixes the other, the European players, the players, some of the players from these other North American leagues, how they mix in, and he can build a team is the next big challenge. But he gets a little bit of a soft landing to begin with.
Yeah, he really does. Now, I have to admit that with these two friendlies, and like you said, normally this is Camp Cupcake, but I think you saw the difference out there today that this isn't Camp Cupcake. I mean, you know, for some people who believe that these two games didn't count, this time around they did, because, you know, Bruce Arena really needs to see the players he's assembled and not just do well in camp, but also what do they do against the opponents that they signed them to. And, you know, I think, like we've already said, some have done well, some have not done well. And for those that have done well, will get their opportunities once again when March comes in. And people have to understand, you need friendlies to assess how you're going to build that roster for World Cup qualifying. You don't all of a sudden say, well, these mean nothing, and then you go right into March assuming, well, they're going to win or they're going to get 3 points. No, we've seen already some games, even in some friendlies, that the players can switch off and not get back on.
Yeah, well, I think one thing to bring up about the Camp Cupcake thing is, I think usually the reason why it's called Camp Cupcake is because the U.S. is in a position where they're in control for qualifying, or you know, they're set for a major tournament. This, I mean, obviously that's not the case this time around. They're last in their qualifying group, and there was some you know, there's, depending on your outlook, there's some trepidation as to whether they will make the World Cup or not. Depending on your outlook is how scared you are of it. Me, not so much, but still. So I think you're right in the sense of, you know, this is a good camp to see some of these players who can bring in the skill set. You know, for example, the fullback situation in the U.S. is still unsettled. There's no solid, there's no lockdown. You know, there's no lock for those positions. So the Graham Zusi experiment was an interesting one to see. You know, can he play out there? And can he contribute defensively? And what we saw today and what we saw in the last match was, he's really good at going forward, which we kind of knew. He can contribute a lot in the attack, which we kind of knew. But as Landon Donovan pointed out on TV tonight, him going 1v1 with an attacking player and his positioning with the back line is still suspect. And that's, you know, that says a lot about, you know, does that mean he's going to get called in? It's a little bit more up in the air because you don't want to have a player like that in a tight match where you're going to give up a goal because his positioning was off or something like that. So, you know, these are the kinds of experiments that are interesting to watch in these kind of matches. You know, who can partner with Michael Bradley? Who can, you know, can Jordan Morris play up front? Can he be, you know, a target striker? You know, these different questions throughout are the kind of things that make these last two matches interesting to watch, even if the quality of play wasn't that great.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you on that. I mean, like we've already said, these types of games, it's not about the group quality, just the individual quality, because you want to see who individually has made it for that roster coming up in March, once again via stadium on Friday, March 24th, which we will see live on Fox Sports 1 at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. And hopefully Robert Hay will be able to go past his bedtime on that one. But anyway.
Oh, I think that's a school night, isn't it? Oh, geez.
Oh, I don't know. It's a Friday night.
Oh, Friday night. Oh, boy. I remember when I used to stay up late on Friday nights.
Well, then again, you do have children, so we don't know. Usually school night is every night for people when they have kids. So
that's very true.
Yes, it is very true. But let's talk about the goal. I thought that was a well-worked goal that got sprung by Dax McCarty. Now, we'll talk about the other time that McCarty got free in the first half, but, you know, that's a great setup, great play by McCarty, who not just finds a way to find Benny Failharbor, but at the same time, how he worked well with Jordan Morris on at least maybe one or two straight give-and-goes. I mean, that was absolutely unbelievable to see what happened there. And I got to say, if Dax doesn't get called up, it's a shame, but I will say this right now. If Jermaine Jones does not I know he'll be suspended for Honduras, but still, though, if Jermaine Jones doesn't play in that second game, which will be in Panama City, why not Dax with Benny Failharbor and Michael Bradley in the midfield?
Yeah, you know, it's you mentioned the kids, and one of the things I like to do with my daughter is watch these games, and we comment because she plays competitive soccer. We comment on different things, and she notices things that she's learned. And one of the things that I try and emphasize to her is looking up and seeing the field and kind of getting a sense of what's around her. And when Benny Feldhaber gets that ball, one of the great things that you see in this play is he notices where Jordan Morris is. He's able to just put kind of a perfectly weighted pass to him so they can go, you know, play a little one-on-one back and forth, and he sets him up perfectly for the goal. And I mentioned, you know, coming in, what are these things that these players can show to Bruce Arena that say, I belong on the U.S. national team for the qualifiers? You have Dax McCarty with good vision and a good forward pass there to pick out the right player at the right time. So that's a check mark in his box. And you have Benny Feldhaber, who puts himself in an attacking position and sees the field around him and is able to set up another player not once but twice in order to get a goal scored. So I think, you know, a lot of people will see that play, that highlight, and they'll be like, oh, man, Jordan Morris, this guy is the real deal, and he is. But I think you're right. Really, what I took away from that was Feldhaber getting his opportunity and taking advantage of it, not just on that play but throughout the match. And then Dax McCarty showing some good stuff. I think there were some negative moments for him, especially at the beginning of the second half, and I think he could have played better overall, but, you know, he still played pretty well, and I think on that goal he was key. But Benny, I think, was very good tonight, and I think that he played in a way that justified the people who have defended him and said, why isn't he in this mix for this for a national team spot? And, you know, as I've said on the past on your show, I don't think he's a starter necessarily, but I do think he's somebody that can come off the bench and give you something. And I think he continues to show that. And I think he'll definitely be in the mix during the World Cup qualifiers.
Oh, I mean, I agree with you there because, you know, you're not just looking for starters, Robert. You're looking for those that could come off the bench and provide a spark. Absolutely. I agree with you there about Benny Feldhaber. I think he can come off the bench and provide a spark. And I think so far, in a rare start opportunity, or the first start opportunity he's probably had since the last time he was called into national team camp, either by Bruce Arena or by Bob Bradley, I think he would make an excellent spark coming off the bench if, you know, Bruce Arena really needs a goal, either to steal a point or to grab the full three.
Yeah, and I think he's a good enough player where he can cause a little bit of chaos in the, you know, just outside the box or in the box. And I think that's something valuable, somebody who has an eye for a goal, an eye for creating opportunities. Sometimes you think, well, that's what a soccer player does. But, no, I think he has that knack where he's able to just create chances. And he's got a good soccer vision about him. So we've seen that, you know, if you're an MLS fan, you've seen that obviously for a long time. And it's good to see that he can translate that to the national team setup, to the international setup. Now, I think we'd be remiss, I'm sure we will talk about this, is the fact that, you know, as you said, this is Jamaica's B, maybe C team. So this isn't like we're playing the German A team or anything like that. But still, you know, again, in these kind of matches, you have to still show that you can contribute, and you still have to play your best. And I think regardless of who they were playing tonight, I think Benny did a good job and definitely showed he should be in the mix.
Yeah, I agree. But let's not forget, though, Andre Blake. You've seen him in MLS. I've seen him in MLS. You know, he is the future of the national team for Jamaica, obviously. And I also believe, you know, he's one of the top keepers in MLS right now, at least top five, along with Robles, him and Robles got only the first 45 minutes, but still. That big save by Blake on Jordan Morris was absolutely spectacular. I mean, I thought Jordan Morris had him beat, but Blake said no, and he forced the ball out for a corner for the United States, but still. I felt that, and I still feel right now, that Andre Blake is probably one of the top five keepers in MLS right now.
Yeah, he's certainly a definite talent, and I think that he is going to be, to use the cliche, a key contributor for Jamaica. Look, I think that Jamaica is getting to the point where, I know they had a bad year last year, but and they're not in the qualifying. But I think Jamaica. See, I'm being kind this time. But I do think that there's a talent pool there where they can be a consistent threat to teams like the U.S. and they can be a consistent competitor. And there will be years where they'll be good. And I think that if you have a good keeper, I mean, you see this in any level of soccer. If you've got a good keeper on your team, that makes a huge difference, and that can provide a security blanket and cover up a lot of the other flaws that you may have. So the fact if he's able to continue to improve his play and play at a high level, as he does for his club team, if he can continue to do that for the international level, then that makes Jamaica that much harder of an opponent for the U.S. Even if there's weaknesses other places, you know, it's hard to stop get a ball past a hot keeper sometimes. Just ask Tim Howard, you know, what he's done for the U.S. over the years. So I think for Jamaica that's a very positive thing, and it'll be good to give them a little bit of hope in a down year.
Yeah, that's the one thing. We'll see what happens with Andre Blake if he does do that. Let's go to Dax McCarty. Now, once again, that's the one thing about Dax that I like. I'm going to miss him, obviously, not being with the Red Bulls anymore. He'll be with the Chicago Fire now. But just his uncanniness on the field. I mean, it was weird seeing him wide open because after Morris was stopped by Andre Blake, the United States played that corner short. I don't know how Dax was wide open. Jamaican defense was sleeping out there, but quick ball to Dax, who found Sebastian Leggett. And sadly, that curler just misses the far upper 90 on that back post. I mean, I thought that was definitely a highlight reel goal, but it just curls around the back end of that far post. I thought that was a goal, you know, for the ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was certainly look. I same thing. I was watching it and went, "Oh, that's going to be. Oh, I guess it's out." I think the thing with Dax McCarty, the question always has always been not that is he talented enough. You know, you listed a lot of his good qualities, and the other good quality is he's a darn good team leader and a great personality, and he's the kind of person you can build a marketing campaign around for your team. So he brings a lot of intangibles both on and off the field that make him a very good MLS player. The question is, can he translate it to the international level? And, you know, you see some positives tonight, like the play you just mentioned and his lead up to the goal. And there's a lot of very good positives. But you also see some negatives at times. You know, there's some times where he got pushed off the ball a little bit by a young Jamaican team. There were some times where he was just out of position tracking back. And, I personally like him. I loved him at DC United. I tolerated him at Wet Red Bull. He's the kind of player that, you know, we all have these players where we're like, it's hard to put personal feelings aside. And I think if he were to make the national team for this World Cup qualifier, I wouldn't be outraged by it. I'd be kind of surprised. But I also wouldn't be upset if I can run through my gamut of emotions there, because I do think that he is a very good MLS player, but a marginal international player. I think if he's a player that the U.S. is depending on, we're in deep trouble. But if he's the last player picked, I'm not outraged by it. But I'm happy for him.
You want outrage, don't you?
I love outrage. That's what U.S. national soccer team or U.S. National team fans love. We love outrage. Fire Bruce Arena.
We love outrage.
He's only won one game so far. Come on, what's this?
Exactly. Have you seen? Well,
where's
before
our beautiful
we continue
soccer?
On
Get rid
here, have you seen the Twitter page for Arena Out?
I see too much negative political stuff that I can't have too much negative soccer stuff at this point. I can only have so much negativity in my life, but when I'm in a mood one day, I need to look it up. I guess I'm hoping maybe somebody just reserved it just in case it become hot property, but what's their prime beef against Bruce Arena?
They think U.S. soccer just went backwards because they don't think he can do it again. they think they went backwards on
so
the
hiring coach.
So they
should have hired Jose Mourinho or Mancini, or who should they have hired?
They don't say that. They just want Bruce out.
Ah, okay.
So it's basically it's one of those question marks of, okay, well, if you want Bruce out, well, who do you think should take over? And, of course, you know, you're not going to get that answer because they don't know either. They just know that Bruce Arena is not the guy for U.S. soccer today.
You know, Bruce Arena is an absolute legend in this country in soccer. I mean, what he's done for soccer in this country is unquestioned, I think. You know, at the college level, at the MLS level, and at the international level the first time around. And I think that, you know, does that make him the right coach for this moment? I don't know, but I do know that the timing was right for him to come back. As I said before, you know, he needed something new to do. He knows what to do. The U.S. needs to qualify. It's a good, convenient get-together. If he stays past the 2018 cycle, I'm very there's where my outrage comes in. I'm really worried about that because we've seen that show before. But I think that if he's coming in and he's going to guide this to, you know, guide us to qualification and do well in the World Cup, then I'm okay with that. Now, if I can tangent for a minute,
and
build on that for one. Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well,
I will hold on to this microphone. So here's my question then. And where I might agree with some of these people on this Twitter page is what's the future of this team? And why I ask that is his predecessor was the head coach and the and I'm blanking. Why am I blanking on the title right now? But Jurgen Klinsmann basically had the two dual roles. He was the head coach of the team. He was also the talent development side of it as well.
Yes.
So he
right.
Thank you. Yes. So when Bruce Arena leaves, who is the next person up, both to coach this team and to continue to build U.S. soccer talent pool? And I think that's a big question right now that there is no good answer for, and that's what worries me as a U.S. fan. You know, who is that person that's going to come in? And you know, this isn't – not everybody can have a situation like Germany where, again, Jurgen Klinsmann leaves and his trusted lieutenant slash tactical genius comes in and continues the success. That's a very rare situation. But who are the people driving this program, this development forward? It's got to be the coach of the national team. It's got to be, you know, the people in the office of U.S. soccer. It's got to be there's got to be a core people that really are putting together the future of this country soccer. And it's not just a marketing slogan. It's actual, you know, here's what we're going to do. And I think there's a void in leadership right there, right now. And if U.S. soccer doesn't identify some of these key positions, who's going to fill them after the 2018 cycle, then I think that's a big problem. I mean, we're looking at the possibility of the U.S. hosting or co-hosting potentially a World Cup in 2026. Where is the U.S. men's national team going to be at that point? Are we going to be in the same basic situation that we are now, or is there going to be some sort of incremental progress towards growing soccer in this country? Because if a U.S. World Cup in 2026 is a lot like it is in 1994, except for the fact that we have a professional league, I think that's a big failure at the U.S. Soccer Federation level. And I'll step off my soapbox now.
And to be honest with you, Robert, I do agree with you. I think for now, Bruce Arena is going to save the qualification process for the national team right now. That's what you brought him over here to do. I don't believe, and as much as I do like Bruce Arena, and I do respect him for what he's done for the program, and I do respect him for what he's done in Major League Soccer, I do agree with you. I think if he stays beyond Russia 2018, that's an issue that we're going to have another discussion about, because I personally believe that Bruce Arena, like I said, I respect him. I respect him for the job he's done for the two cycles he was involved with. I just don't feel that he is the right man to go past this, you know, 2 year. If it is 2 years, we'll see what happens, and hopefully they do qualify for Russia. But once again, I just think the program has to find someone else to push it forward. Now, would you want to bring back Bob Bradley again? That's another discussion as well. Do you want to maybe bring in someone else that is an MLS that maybe has better ideas, maybe like a Jason Kreis if he feels like he wants to leave Orlando, even though it might be a little too early in that sense? Maybe it is a Jesse Marsh. Maybe it could be a Jay Heaps. I'm only throwing his name out there as an example. I'm not saying I want Jay Heaps to be a national team head coach. You know, maybe you try again with a foreign head coach from Europe or from South America that wants to give it a shot. You know, being the a national team head coach for this program. I don't know who's out there at the moment. Right now, all you can worry about, Robert, is what's in front of you right now. And in front of us right now is the United States in complete and utter danger of not qualifying for Russia 2018. And this would be the first time that they would never, ever qualify for a World Cup since – well, obviously, since it all got started in 1990 when they did qualify with the Paul Caligiuri shot heard around the world down in Port of Spain and Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, I think that just the way the hex is lined up, I'm a little bit more optimistic about the U.S. qualifying. I just think that there's too many opportunities for them to make it, too many slots. You know, even if you finish fifth, you have the play-in game and all that. Really, if you look at the U.S., the potential players on this team right now, they're rounding into pretty good form. You look at players like Christian Pulisic and some others, you know, both domestic and abroad, I think the U.S. has the talent. And now that you have a coach that knows what he's doing and can just get results, especially in these kind of qualifiers, I'm a little bit more optimistic that, you know, we'll be fine. We won't finish first probably, but you know, if we qualify again, you look at Mexico and see what they did. They qualified by the skin of their teeth for the last World Cup, and they had some success in that tournament. So you know, the U.S. just needs to qualify, you know, take a deep breath and figure out how they can succeed in the 2018 World Cup in Russia.
Yeah, that's the thing, because right now it is about what's in front of you. It's about what needs to happen now. You don't worry about the next qualifying cycle if they do qualify, or even if they even attempt to qualify, because obviously I'm still having issues with the Qatar. Not so much that they got the World Cup. I'm not saying because, you know, I'm not against an Arab country hosting a World Cup. I would like for them to host a World Cup, but the legitimate way and the right way, not the shenanigans that was pulled when Sepp Blatter was running FIFA at the time, which we all know what happened because of the whole Bin Hammam situation. But, you know, I would like to see them legitimately, you know, win a World Cup bid when they actually build the stadiums first for the climate that is unbearable during a normal World Cup summer. But then again, what are you going to do? We'll see what happens. But once again, Robert, it's about what's in front of you now, because you don't want to say do svidaniya before you even get there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think that the U.S. is set up right now where, in the you know, with what's in front of them, I think that we'll be okay. I mean, really, the talent pool is good enough right now where we have just as much talent as these other teams, if not more, and probably more. And again, Bruce Arena knows how to survive these matches. I think that was one of the big failings with Jurgen Klinsmann is he understood European soccer, he understood European club soccer, international soccer, and CONCACAF's just a different animal, both with the way it's set up and just the way the qualifiers are done. And I think he never really successfully latched onto his strategy for that, and I think that hurt him. Whereas again, Bruce Arena's done this before many times, and he knows. I mean, you saw him before the game going over and hugging the Jamaica coaches. I mean, he knows these coaches in these different federations, the officials, and you know, he's talked to all of them. He knows these players who are playing on the other side of the pitch and the administrators and everything like that. I mean, he knows North American soccer, and you know, I think that's a big advantage in qualifying because you know what you have to do to get a result. You know, you don't have to worry about, you know, winning 5-0 and playing beautiful soccer. It's you know, getting that 1 point when you need it and 3 points when you need it and just moving up the hex standings until you're in the safe zone. And I think that's what he'll do. He'll get the U.S. into qualifying, and then we can have this discussion of what will be in front of us will be the World Cup. And, you know, the discussion will then become, well, what is success for the U.S. at the World Cup? You know, this team that almost didn't qualify for the World Cup and now is here and has this coach who's a, you know, either a retread or someone who's coming in to save the program and you know, what does success mean? And that'll be a good discussion. I think I'm looking forward to having, because only a certain number of teams can have that discussion, because a lot of others don't make the World Cup. So
exactly, but soon they will with the new format. But we'll have to see where the spots get divvied up from. But we'll talk about that. That's another discussion.
That's true.
That's another topic for another time. But as we move forward here, okay, Robert. So out of all the players that you saw, I don't know if you saw the game on Sunday against Serbia, but if you did, which players really stood out to you? Let's go with Darlington Nagbe first.
You mean for both matches, or for just the ones
for
on
both
Sunday?
Matches,
or
yeah, on both. I mean, you know, did you watch Sunday or no?
I could only catch the highlights for Sunday, so
okay.
I saw the highlights and then I watched tonight's matches. So, but Darlington Nagbe, you know, in general, I think is. You know, I've been high on him for a while. I think he could be a spark plug for this team, and could contribute some, I think, some positive energy in the attack. I think the danger with him is he's not consistent enough internationally that you're going to feel confident putting him in, knowing that you're going to get, you know, a positive result every time. But I do think that when he does bring something positive, something very positive for this team. So I think he's the kind of player that you're definitely going to put in a World Cup qualifying team, because you need his skills. And when he plays well, he plays very well. So, and I think you saw that over the two matches, not as much tonight, just because he was subbed in late. Most of the discussion in the analysis focused on whether, you know, the time off he took from international soccer for his family. But, you know, I think he's the kind of player that you do want to bring in, unless he's going through a terrible funk. You want to bring him into the international setup.
I agree with you there. I think Nagbe is the future for the national team. We saw glimpses of him during semifinal round of qualifying before the hex began, and I really think Nagbe is a future national team superstar when he gets that opportunity. The one player I think right now that has surprised me, and it's a nice surprise, it has to be the LA Galaxy's Sebastian Leggett. Footwork he has when the ball is between his feet is absolutely amazing. I like what he does when he's got the ball between his feet, when he has four defenders on him, whether he's in the middle of the park or when he's bringing up the ball in a wide position, especially on the left side. I think he's a solid crosser. I think that from what I have seen so far, I think he could either be starting or coming off the bench at the same time. And I think you need someone like that who's not just a ball holder and also a ball winner, but he can attack with the ball going up the flank. So I don't know how you feel about Leggett, but I think he definitely – and I understand, you know, Bruce was his coach at the Galaxy, but still though – you have to see what he can do in a higher level in the international game. And I think Leggett right now, for me, either as a starter or off the bench, he would be a perfect fit right now.
Yeah, he's definitely an intriguing prospect for this team. And I think he's a good example of why it's a good idea sometimes to go over to Europe and just, you know, even if it's not necessarily your consistent star or starter or anything like that, I think it's obvious his time over in Europe helped him with his skill set, gave him a more, shall we say, international flair to his game. You know, you're right with the footwork. It's very good. I was kind of surprised that he was moved around the way he was during this match. Maybe I shouldn't have been. Again, I think Bruce Arena wanted to kind of see him in a couple different positions and where he could play him. I think the broadcast team, you know, I watched the Fox Sports 1 broadcast tonight, and I think they were kind of shocked. They expected him to sit next to Michael Bradley and kind of play that Jermaine Jones role, and that's why they expected Michael Bradley to come in to kind of test him up, you know, that partnership there. And then when he moved out to the wings, they were kind of surprised. I think Bruce is looking for a way to put him on this team, and I'm okay with that because I do think that he brings, like you said, good ball skills and a good soccer IQ to this team. So he's the kind of player that I think I see him more as somebody off the bench or as an emergency fill-in, you know, as a Jermaine Jones suspended kind of thing, to see, at least in the short term. Now, long term, is he someone that could be a starter? I think there's a possibility there, no doubt about that. But for now, it's kind of like, where does he fit in with this team? And it's the answer is somewhere. And I think Bruce is still trying to figure that out, and I think that he'll bring him up just for that reason.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. I mean, like I said already, I think he could be coming off the bench, or he could be a spot starter, depending on where Bruce plays him. Because I think he has that ability to work with the ball, and not just to handle the ball very well and not just bring up the ball very well, but in the match against Serbia, he had four defenders on him, four Serbian defenders circling him, blocking him, kept the ball between his feet, try to find a way to get himself out, or if he couldn't get himself out, at least try to find someone open to pass the ball to. And I thought he did a fantastic job of doing just that, at least to get himself out of a position where he could have been in trouble, and he just worked himself out of it. That's my that's how I feel.
And for something for your listeners who may or may not, some of them will be aware of this, some of them will not. One of the big things that U.S. soccer is emphasizing at the youth level is footwork. I mean, to the almost exclusion of at some levels, passing and other things. I mean, footwork is the primary emphasis. And what you see with Leggett is why that's now become kind of an emphasis with U.S. soccer is because players like him can do things like you just described. And U.S. players haven't been able to do that in the past when they've been focused on, you know, other things when they've been coming up through, you know, U.S. youth setups and things like that. So U.S. soccer is really pushing footwork for that exact reason that you described, and so that there can be more players like Sebastian Leggett who can have those skills and kind of slot into different places. So I think that he, or at least his skills, are potentially the future of U.S. soccer if their plan goes through.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen, obviously, when they go forward and try to find a way to get those 3 points in the hexagonal. So we'll see what happens there. Walker Zimmerman, and I guess just like a referee, when they don't talk about you, that means you're doing something good. And I think Walker Zimmerman in this match, you know, the FC Dallas Academy product, you know, I think he did his club proud. I think he did his academy friends proud that graduated with him to the MLS level. So far, I think he's done a great job. Would I like to see more out of him? Absolutely, on a national team level. But for now, you have to say that he's done a good job, and maybe Bruce Arena will use him for these qualifiers in March.
Yeah, you know, he's someone that I know FC Dallas has been big on for a while. I mean, he was, you know, first-round draft pick and everything like that, and then injuries and other things kind of kept him off the field for a while, and he's now just beginning to round into, I think, the form that people expected him to be. And you're right, as a defender, if nobody's talking about you, then you're doing things correctly. And I think he had a good game today. He definitely, you know, he had a very good match. That U.S. backline wasn't troubled as much as it would be in other matches, but still, I mean, it was no drama, and that was a good thing. You know, where does he fit on this U.S. national team setup? I think he's definitely a prospect for the future. I would venture to say that he's behind Steve Birnbaum and others in the pecking order. You know, I think Steve Birnbaum is kind of in that B pool, that, you know, that next level down, you know, if some of these A players,
you know,
if Jeff Cameron's
like
not ready.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, he's not. But I do agree with you about Birnbaum.
Say,
I do
like Jeff
him
Cameron
in the national team. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, Jeff Cameron definitely is not ready because he's just coming back from the injury. But still, though, I do agree with you about Birnbaum. Mm-hmm. I liked what I saw from him last year, especially in the January game, the first game when they took on Iceland and he got the match winner. I do like him as a center back. I do like him for the national team. I also like him when he's attacking, when you're taking corners, obviously, in the opposition's end, and he's heading him in. I think Birnbaum is definitely – I would say if he's not starting, at least he comes off the bench. But I do agree with you about Birnbaum. I do think he is – in my opinion, I think he is ready for the national team.
Yeah, I think for Birnbaum, he would be someone who would make the bench and would spot start for an injury. There's a couple other players I'd still see over him, but I think for the future, definitely he's there. And you're right, I think what he does on set pieces is incredibly valuable for the U.S. national team. So I think that's really a strength of his. But Zimmerman, again, this is a guy who has been expected a lot of for a few years, and it's good to see that it's coming together. And I think you'll see more of him in the U.S. national team. This isn't his last cap by far. And I think that, there's certainly a number of youngish U.S. defenders out there that are going to try to lock down those starting spots for a few years. But I think that he will be the kind of player that you're going to hear his name called up. If not in the immediate future, then definitely in the years to come, you'll hear him being called up for U.S. national team matches.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and probably that Gold Cup this coming summer, that could be one of those moments where Birnbaum does get called up. We'll see what happens, including Walker Zimmerman. I think for the first time right now, Robert, we had got a question mark at keeper, because usually we wouldn't have to worry about the goalkeeper. It's always been Tim Howard. Brad Guzan stepped in and has done a good job, and it's an issue right now that who do you give the starting nod to? Because let's be honest, Brad Guzan's not getting any opportunities in England. I know he's going to be starting in goal now for Atlanta United back here in MLS. Tim Howard is still recovering from his injury he received against Mexico in the qualifier against Columbus. Who do you give the nod to? I mean, we got Nick Raimondo, we got Luis Robles, and we got right now David Bingham. I don't think Yarbrough is going to be the one that's going to get an opportunity in a hotly contested World Cup qualifier. And the question is, out of the three we've seen so far in Raimondo, who has done well in Gold Cup tournaments but never a true World Cup qualifier, do you think this is Raimondo's opportunity now? Do you believe that Nick Raimondo is going to be the starter for the national team? Because, that's for the first time in a long time, that's a big question mark.
Yeah, and this is a scary situation for the U.S. in the sense, if you're a true MLS fan, you probably don't feel this way. But if you look at the pool, MLS has always had good keepers, but the fact that probably you're starting your number one, your number two, and probably number three are all coming from MLS and not from Europe, where American players really, do well at that position is kind of a unsettling thought. But I think it's between Guzan and Raimondo, depending on how Guzan does with his new team. I've always liked Nick. I think he's a very good keeper and does a lot with what he has. And I think you're right. When he's played in the Gold Cup, he's played well. And I like to see that he's getting more and more chances with the national team. I think Yarbrough is somebody that Klinsmann really liked, and I think because of his experience overseas. And I'm sure he's someone we're going to keep seeing just because, with where he's playing with his club career, he's certainly worth a look. But I'm glad Robles got called up. And it's hard in these kind of matches because you don't really get to see Robles had a great save tonight that actually probably could have been a goal based on the rebound. But mm-hmm. it was a good save regardless. But that was basically all he did for 45 minutes. You have to get in someone else because in the second half because you've got to see, you have this pool of keepers and you want to see what they do for the national team. So you don't really get a chance to prove yourself too much in the international setup. You're not facing Argentina, and you can put a stamp on the position for yourself. So it's kind of hard in these kind of games to really stand out from the pack. But I do think that I'm glad Robles got a call up because I think for for Red Bull, he's been one of the best keepers in MLS for a few years now, and probably could have won more than one Keeper of the Year, if not for a number of other good keepers, including Raimondo. But I think that he should be challenging for probably the number three spot behind pick two out of Howard, Guzan, and Raimondo. You pick two from there, and the third one is being challenged by, I think, Robles and one or two others. But it is, as I went back to the beginning, what I said at the beginning is a good keeper covers up a lot of mistakes and a lot of issues, a lot of flaws in your team. And that's true of international teams and club teams. And not having a solid, proven, very good keeper for the U.S. Going into the World Cup is a concern. And I hope that Guzan and Raimondo prove us wrong, or Guzan just excels at the new super team in MLS, Atlanta United. But it's for a position that's always been a U.S. strength, or at least a U.S. strength for a long time, for it not to be is a concern.
Yeah, you're correct there, and that's the one thing that I'm a little more concerned about than normal. It's who's going to be in goal and how are they going to react. So that's the one issue I believe currently that we have here for the national team, especially goalkeeper, because usually that's a strength. And right now I'm a little more nervous than normal because that could be a negative, which I hope it won't be, but you never know. And hopefully there will be an answer to that when we get to that bridge to cross. But other than that, Jordan Morris, this is the thing. I think he is the future, even though I don't believe he's a starter right now. In this type of a match, yes. Maybe in the Gold Cup, yes. But if you're talking about World Cup qualifying, I believe at the moment you keep him on the bench, and then you bring him in as that super sub that can spark a big play for the national team to either steal a point, or if it's tied, he gets you the winner. Because you can tell he's got the wheels. He has the savvy. He has the know-how. And thankfully, I finally got a chance to see him when the Sounders came to Red Bull Arena last year after the Copa America group stage break. And I'm telling you, he's the goods. He's the real deal. And I'm really happy for the kid. And let's be honest, that's the one thing that Jurgen Klinsmann did right. He found a diamond in the rough. And that is Jordan Morris. And that's the one good thing you can say about Jurgen Klinsmann. He did find talent within the U.S. college system.
Yeah, I find it hard to disagree with any of what you said. I think, if him coming in and filling, that striker off the bench role, if it's Jordan Morris instead of Chris Wondolowski, I think that's a massive upgrade for the U.S. U.S. national team fans tend to hype the next great striker, and I think there's a lot of hype going on around Jordan Morris right now. And regardless of that hype, I do think he's a talent. He's someone who can contribute. He's someone who's got – he's got no fear, which is great for a striker, and he's someone who will go in and will score that goal, like you said, if you need one, or at least be in the right position to try and score a goal if you need one. And I think he'll have a chance to grow into kind of a Clint Dempsey type of player in the future. But for now, having him as an option off the bench late in the game, I feel a lot more confident about him being in there than Wondolowski or a number of other options that have been bandied about for the past few years. So I hope he continues his development at the international level, and I hope he can take from matches like this positives that he can build on and continue to improve as a player and really continue to grow, because I think if he does, not only will he be a benefit off the bench in the short term, in the long term he'll help settle this position, which it's one of these positions that we talk about every once in a while. The four, who's going to play up front for the U.S., who's going to be the forward in a 4-4-2 or whatever formation the U.S. plays. If you threw out him and Bobby Wood in a few years, that's probably not going to be a terrible idea, the way those two are progressing. So, that's a very exciting thought. But, even for now, I think he's a good option off the bench.
Yeah, he really is. And I just feel like, I really do feel like that he can get into a starter's role whenever the opportunity presents it to himself. Now, like I said, I think he could be a starter in the Gold Cup. World Cup qualifying, I truly believe that he'll come off the bench, and I think he's going to be a good super sub for Bruce Arena when they get out there. And who knows? 8 matches remaining, Robert, in World Cup qualifying, and once again, it's going to start over at Avaya Stadium in San Jose, California, when the United States hosts Honduras on Friday, March 24th, and then they go to Panama on Tuesday, March 28th. We won't go through the remaining 6 qualifiers, obviously 2 in June, 2 in September, and then 2 in October. And I think the main question is this right now. Is the USA going to get one of the top 3 automatic spots, or are they going to be in that international playoff that they've never been to in their lives? I don't remember going from 1994 all the way till now that the United States has been in a very difficult qualification status where they just get either the third position or they're out. That half spot right now, I'm not saying the United States has to push for that, but let's be honest, that's their saving grace, because I can see them winning against Costa Rica on American soil. Honduras will be a difficult place for them to play in Honduras. Panama, mm-hmm. They've improved, but then again, you know, we saw what happened when the United States played them in the final game in the last cycle's hexagonal, where Panama needed to win and they couldn't do it. And then, you know, going down to Trinidad and Tobago, you know, that's points. It doesn't matter if it's a draw or a win. Those are going to be points that they're going to get. So, because Trinidad and Tobago right now are also in jeopardy of not qualifying as well. And it's always going to be that match at the Azteca, depending on what time the match is going to be played at. And I'm talking about daytime or nighttime. Where right now that 2-match unbeaten streak for the United States in the Azteca is on the line.
Yeah, we own that place now at this point, right? With two-match unbeaten streak. I mean, we basically own that place. It's, you know, Rose Bowl South. God, you have Mexico fans right now that are just ready to call you up and yell at you for that comment.
Well, first of all, they're still yelling at him. Sorry, but he's still the manager.
Yeah, that's true. There's other things you have to worry about. You know, I think the U.S. will be fine. I think that there's – I said this in the past. They're probably right now the second or third most talented team in CONCACAF in terms of overall talent. But again, that's good enough if you could pull a team together and get points on the road, get a point on the road, get 3 at home, you're going to qualify, no doubt about that. And I think that the U.S. is in a position where they're going to do that. Again, they've got a pragmatic coach. They've got enough talent. You know, and these matches are spread out over it's not like a tournament where you're going to qualify through a tournament, you know, in between club seasons. You're going to have tired players with tired legs. You know, you're going to have you know, 2 matches in March where you're going to have your European players who are getting towards the end of their season, but you have the MLS players who are still fresh. You're going to have the summer, you know, and then you're going to have the fall. And you have a bunch of players who are in different cycles and different times of their club career. And that's one of the benefits of having an MLS schedule and a U.S. soccer schedule that is spring to fall versus the European schedule. Some of your players are going to be fresh when the others aren't and vice versa. And these matches being spread out kind of helps with that. So I think the U.S. is, barring some unforeseen disaster, they're going to qualify. They won't finish top, I'm sure, but they'll finish in the second, third, and make it through. If for some reason a disaster happens, that they play a play-in, you know, they'll play – I think – are they still playing an Oceania team? Or
I think it's an
like
Asian
that.
Team,
you know,
this
it'll
time.
It'll be an Asian team
Asian.
This time around. I mean, you know, it's a better confederation, no doubt about that, and there's some quality teams there. But I think you'd still have to say U.S. is favorites. So, I mean, they put themselves in a bad position, but I still think that they're in a position to advance.
Now, before we say goodbye, I never do this, Robert, but I want to do this for someone that was following both of us on Twitter, obviously. I want to congratulate Miss Nakesha Gale. She is the aunt to a Mr. Shamar Nicholson on Jamaica, who did get his first cap for the Jamaican national team. So for Miss Gale, for Auntie Nakesha, we want to wish you congratulations on your nephew getting his first cap for Jamaica. And that's all you're going to get. No.
Here, here.
But other
here,
than
here.
Robert,
congratulations.
Here, here. Exactly. Robert, thank you very much as always. I'll talk to you next time. And have a good evening, Robert. And enjoy the weekend.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you.
You're welcome. And for Robert Hay, this is Daniel Feuerstein. Once again, the United States defeats Jamaica by final of a goal to nil. Bruce Arena gets his first win on 2.0 of his era, as once again the United States on a Jordan Morris goal defeats Jamaica by a goal to nil. For Robert Hay, I'm Daniel Feuerstein, and thank you for listening to this special Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. And once again, USA versus Jamaica post-game show, 1-0 United States on a Jordan Morris goal over Jamaica. Have a good night, and as always, please enjoy your football. Bye-bye for now.